From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Federal Judge Clark Wadups must know the complicated background of polygamy in Utah, how it's bound up in the experience of the LDS Church and the history of the state of Utah. So when confronted with a legal challenge to the law, he seems to have taken his time to make a ruling. 11 months, in fact, and late last week he released his decision, all 91 pages. Today in the program, we're talking about Wadup's conclusions, which amount to decriminalizing part of the Utah polygamy law, but it's more complicated than that. We'll talk about what the ruling said and what it didn't about marriage and privacy and about polygamy in general. Also, we'll get some reaction to the ruling, which means we're hoping to hear from you after this news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In a very carefully worded decision, federal judge Clark Wadups ruled late last week that one part of Utah's law prohibiting polygamy is unconstitutional. It's still unclear what that ruling is going to mean. It doesn't mean necessarily polygamy is now legal. I mean, you can't go out and get multiple marriage licenses in this state, for example. But Wadups seems to have been saying that the government can't tell you how many women you can live with and call your wives. Wadup said the country is evolving away from laws like that, so he put an issue that has been one of the most controversial and most particular to Utah into a kind of larger context. Today in the program, we're talking about what that ruling means, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jennifer Dobner is with us. She covered Friday's ruling for the wire service Reuters. She has covered polygamy in this state for some 7 years now for the Associated Press. She's been a reporter with the Deseret News, with the Salt Lake Tribune. She's joining us here in the studio. And Jennifer, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's sort of lay out some background, I suppose, for this. This case was brought by a polygamous family, a man by the name of Cody Brown. He and his four wives, and a lot of people, they're fairly well known in the sense that they're the stars of this television reality program, used to live in Utah County, now live in Nevada.
Right. The Browns, which is Cody and first wife Mary, and then I'm going to get somebody's name wrong, Janelle, Robin, and Christine.
Yep.
They've been in Utah a long time. For a while, they were part of sort of the polygamy advocacy movement. They were up on the Hill sort of talking to lawmakers and speaking publicly about their life. Their TLC show debuted in the fall of 2010. They were living in Lehigh at the time. And shortly after that, it became known that the Lehigh Police Department and the Utah County Attorney's Office had launched a bigamy investigation into the family. That brought some trouble for the family. I think A couple of the spouses lost their jobs. There were some public harassment type situations, and they decided to relocate to Nevada. I think they're living in the Las Vegas area now. And then in the summer of 2011, with the help of Washington, D.C.-based attorney Jonathan Turley, they've launched this legal challenge to the bigamy law.
What was the essence of the challenge? What were they trying to do? And did they have a pretty grand sense of it all, that they wanted to completely start to undermine these laws against polygamy?
They weren't asking for Utah to redefine marriage in the statutes.
Yeah.
They weren't asking for multiple marriage licenses. What they were saying is, we have a right to privacy, that there are Supreme Court rulings like Lawrence v. Texas, which struck down the sodomy law in that state, that guarantee that consenting adults have a right to privacy in their intimate personal sexual relationships, and that no state can reach into my household and tell me that my relationship is criminal. And essentially, that's what Utah's statute does.
Right.
I mean, the bigamy statute has two prongs, and it's unique to every other bigamy law in the U.S.
So let me go back. So you've got – so every state has one of these things.
Yes.
Utah's unique, as you say, in that – and I guess – was it in the 1970s they added another statute, another element?
Yeah, 1973. It's the purport to marry piece. It's the cohabitation piece. And here's what the law says. On the one hand, it's illegal if you, Doug Fabrizio, have a legal wife and then you go out and try to get another legal wife by getting a second so-called valid marriage license. That's fraud. That's illegal. The cohabitation prong says if you are legally married to a person and then you enter into a marriage-like relationship with another person, you are guilty of bigamy by virtue of cohabitation. That's unique.
You don't have to have a license.
If you're in the same, yeah. So this is how the state has prosecuted polygamists. Polygamy is banned in Utah's constitution. That's how we got to statehood. But the underlying statute that's used is the bigamy statute. So, and it's rarely used. It's generally been used as an add-on, a collateral crime to other crimes like abuse or child sex crimes. But it's never really – it's never used against anyone other than religious fundamentalists, Mormon fundamentalists in Utah. I can think of a couple of bigamy cases in the last, 30 years in which it was actual fraud. The only time it's ever used really is for prosecuting polygamists.
And was it clear that that was the intent of Utah lawmakers in the 70s? Do we know?
Well, I don't know if I can say that, but it seems that's what it suggests. Yes. I mean, polygamy, as many of us know, is a very touchy subject here in Utah because of its religious, roots in the early teachings of the Mormon Church.
So Judge Wattups was going after that second prong. That's what he focused on.
Yes, and he calls it religious cohabitation. And what he concludes is that you don't have a legal right to religious cohabitation, but essentially the law infringes on your First Amendment right to practice it as part of your religion because we're not using it against anybody else.
What do we know about Judge Wattups? I mean, he is an appointee from George W. Bush,
2008,
right? Mm-hmm. So he's a Utahn.
What I know from a little research is a BYU undergrad, University of Utah law school graduate. But in terms of his ideology, I couldn't really tell you. I've been in his court many times. He asks a lot of questions, very pointed and deep questions. And I know he has a reputation in the legal community as a really good legal scholar. But whether or not
he's a moderate or a conservative or a liberal, it's hard to say.
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that ultimately, if you're a good judge, we can't guess, right? One thing that is interesting about the 91-page ruling, if you read it,
is that remarkable that it was 91 pages?
I've seen longer ones, it's extremely detailed in its legal research. It's also extremely detailed in the footnotes in its Mormon history and the history of polygamy laws in the United States. It looks like a syllabus for a class on the history.
So he's putting it in context.
He's putting it in context. And he also says quite clearly in there that this was not an easy decision to reach.
A lot of that is interesting that you got that language that he kind of confesses to a lot of hand-wringing, that the court really had to sort of work through a lot of this.
Yeah. He says it. He just comes out and says it, that it has been a difficult – and it would be easy to just default to previous challenges and say, the statute's valid. Because it's not the first challenge to the bigamy law in Utah. It's been challenged in the Rodney Holm case in 2003, I think it was. And that's another interesting piece of it is in the Rodney Holm case – Rodney Holm was charged with, child sex crimes and also with bigamy. Then Supreme Court Justice Christine Durham was the dissenting voice on upholding the bigamy charge for many of these same reasons, saying that the statute is unfairly applied to religious polygamists who are entering into these spiritual marriages in order to practice, to keep with the tenets of their faith.
That Durham dissent. Did that give us? Was that seen as kind of one of the first openings to this this matter?
I think at the time it was seen, yes, as a big opening and a surprise, as I think many people are probably thinking this is a surprise. I mean, the polygamists in Utah, the fundamentalist Mormons in Utah, which people may or may not know, there's about an estimated 30,000 of them across the Intermountain West, most of them here, who continue practicing polygamy. They made a conscious decision about 13 years ago to move towards decriminalization. Some of the wives who were not some of them were not practicing polygamy at the time, they started speaking out on sort of an education campaign, objecting to laws that were being proposed to tweak, you know, the bigamy law, giving interviews to sort of shed light on the fact that, you know, some of the stereotypes don't hold up. Not every single person who's in a plural family is a victim of abuse, for example. They began a serious campaign, and I think that a couple years ago, we have the Joe Darger book, and you're going to have him on later.
Yeah,
you know,
moment.
That's part of the decision. Start talking about our life, moving sort of public opinion away from the stereotypes. And I think a lot of the people I've talked to over the weekend were like pinching themselves on Saturday morning, like, did this really happen? Because they've lived one way for a really long time with the threat of a felony criminal prosecution hanging over their head.
Wadops was influenced. You mentioned the Supreme Court case. This was from 2003, Lawrence v. Texas, mm-hmm. which struck down the Texas sodomy laws. And it was one of those cases that sort of hinged on the limits of the government's ability to intrude on a person's private lives. Mm-hmm. Judge Anthony Kennedy wrote that the Constitution protects people from, as he put it, unwarranted government intrusions into a dwelling or other private place. That was really important, and I guess this was really influential for Wadops, that language, this idea that the government, that this, there's a private space that the government ought not or has no interest in mm-hmm. going into. Is that right?
I think that's right. And Wadops doesn't say this, but I think if you consider the way our attitudes have changed in the past 10 years, you know, in mainstream culture about marriage and about family, those things are a lot different than they were in 1973. Those things are a lot different than they were in the 1800s when, you know, they passed the laws that banned polygamy in the United States. So in light of Lawrence v. Texas, in that climate, in the climate that we live in now where everybody's ideas of privacy are being expanded, I don't know if you could have had a different ruling. It certainly seemed like that in listening to the court arguments last January.
But in his ruling, the Judge Wadops did mention this sort of, I don't know if progress is the word, but he did mention the court was evolving in a certain
mm-hmm.
way. And that was part of his thinking on all
yeah.
of that.
And somebody asked me this question over the weekend, is this ruling, you know, and this moment for polygamy in Utah completely tied to the LGBT movement? And I think, yeah, actually it probably is, because were it not for the movement, you know, the changes in that side of our thinking about gay couples and their relationships, I don't know if we would have gotten here.
I wonder, I guess the question is, what has changed? What's legal and what's not legal
well,
now?
Polygamy is not legal,
right? As we said,
and Wadops does note that the law is subject to prosecutorial, you know, judgment. Mark Shurtleff, when he was our attorney general, made a very clear statement that he wasn't interested in prosecuting polygamists simply for bigamy.
Right.
He was looking for those other types, more serious crimes. And bigamy's always been sort of an add-on. Nothing really changes. You still can't have two valid marriage licenses. Polygamy is not legal. I don't think this significantly changes, you know, LDS church doctrine either or practice either. But what it does is render the statute, at least for now, you know, moot. What would be the point of pursuing a bigamy prosecution against the Browns now in Utah County if they were still there? If you knew, it would just be tossed out. It would be a wasted effort. The question will be, what will the state do? Will the state appeal to the Tenth Circuit Court? And what would the Tenth Circuit Court how would the Tenth Circuit Court rule on that?
So is this a big deal?
I think it's a big deal if you live in a plural family and you're not sure about who you can tell about your family life and who you can't. I think it's a very big deal for those people. I mean, if you look at it in the context of something like the 53 raid in Short Creek, Hilldale, Colorado City, the FLDS home.
Where men were rounded up and sent to prison.
Men and women, were rounded up and sent to prison. And the aftermath of that, families scattered. You know, it's no accident that Warren Jeffs was born in California. His mother and her children were sent away in order to protect the family from being swept up in future raids. So I think for those families, it is huge. Not every family is a perfect family. Some families have bad experiences. I'm not trying to say that polygamy is perfect, you know, and without its problems. But I think if you, you know, want to go to law school and be a lawyer and you come from a plural family, now maybe you can, because there's no prohibition on your lifestyle that would make you a liar if you stood before the court and said, I'm going to uphold the laws except that, you know, I'm breaking the bigamy statute. Or if you are a mother who has joined a plural family but have children from a previous relationship and you're trying to perhaps gain custody of those kids, your ex-spouse and the courts can't use your polygamous lifestyle choice against you. I mean, we're taking away the state's ability to sort of invalidate your life experience and to make your life more difficult. I mean, a couple years ago, we had this rally down at the city county building where these teenage polygamous kids spoke out, you know, and I was thinking a lot about them over the weekend. Many of those kids want to continue what they've grown up in. And it'll be a different experience for them now. They won't live with the same threat that their parents have, that, you know, you can't tell the kid at school that you're from a plural family because the backlash could be your parents go to prison.
Jennifer Doebner is with us. She is a Salt Lake City-based journalist, covered Friday's ruling for Reuters. And we invite you to join the conversation if you have comments, questions, reaction, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the stunning news, really, that came late last week. A federal judge has ruled that key parts of Utah's polygamy law are unconstitutional. The ruling from Judge Clark Wadups may have, in effect, decriminalized polygamy in this state. Wadups said the country is evolving away from laws like that, and we're talking about the decision, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jennifer Doebner is with us, journalist here in Salt Lake City. She's been covering this issue for a number of years. She covered the Friday ruling for Reuters. Joining us now on the program is Joe Darger. He is in a polygamous relationship here in Salt Lake City, along with his wives Alina, Vicky, and Valerie. You may remember he wrote the book Love Times Three, Our True Story of a Polygamous Marriage, and he's joining us by phone. Joe Darger, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
When did you get the word that the news had come down? When did you first hear it?
Oh, it was about probably 6 o'clock on Friday. I had Cody Brown himself give me a call. And him and I don't talk a lot, and so to see him show up on my caller ID, I immediately took the call, and he just said, we got it, we won, it's done. And it was a little bit of shock. I didn't expect that kind of timing, and yet it just was this incredible moment. We feel like Christmas came early this year.
So give me a sense of there are two prongs to this Utah law. We've been talking about it. Judge Wadups had a very clear statement about the bigamy part of it, but it's still not legal to practice polygamy in a legal sense. So are you take what you can get for now? I mean, how are you reacting to it all?
Well, we're reacting very positively and very happy with the ruling. I think it's exactly what we wanted, and this is what I've been fighting for me 11 years. And so I've always wanted it to be decriminalized. We haven't sought to have legal recognition of our marriage. We want to be able to go in our own temples, our own ceremonies, and just live our life free of the government in it. And so from that standpoint, this doesn't threaten anyone that, you know, about marriage. This isn't anything that is a threat to anyone. This is simply allowing us to live our lives freely and not have this hammer over our head that we've experienced growing up my whole life. I mean, I think for the first time since the 1870s now, a polygamous man can actually live free in the state of Utah.
You said it didn't matter to you if the state could recognize legally your relationships with other women as legal marriage. That's not the next step for you? That isn't something that you want to pursue now, that this maybe step is out of the way?
No, not for me. Maybe that's going to be my children's fight. But I look at this as, you know, there's so much more to do in educating both people within our culture and out. And the impact of this is, I mean, it's immediate and it's very emotional for all of us. But it's also that this impact will continue to ripple out as we, you know, we continue to learn to coexist and be part of the fabric of society, and instead of, you know, feeling marginalized and living in fear and in secret. And so, there are more important things to me than having the state come in and legally recognize my marriage. It's just simply just allow me to live freely.
801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Let's take a call. This is David. He's with us in Bozeman, Montana. David, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking that. Just a quick comment. I just thought it was interesting that this ruling, as we've heard on the show, came about in part because of the efforts of the LGBT community, which is probably a lifestyle that the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, a lifestyle that they would probably disagree with. So that's just an interesting juxtaposition, and I wonder what your guests think about that.
Joe, what do you think? Thanks. Joe, what do you make of that? There's some irony here that that this monumental decision, at least from your perspective, may have come about from activism within the gay community.
I don't think there's no question that without Lawrence, Texas ruling and the activism of that community that that it has had an impact on ours. And yet this ruling is not a gay marriage issue. And as far as our take on that, and my take personally is, I think that community has been one that has early on recognized the injustice that we've been under, and I think, you know, even from our standpoint, it's realizing we don't all have to agree with one another to accept one another in this society, and that becomes real important. I don't expect everyone to agree with me as a polygamous man, or that's how they want their families to be constructed. But I think we can all accept one another and learn to coexist. That's what this country is about.
You've said that it's a shift in the narrative, that the traditional powers are, as you've put it, letting go of this fear of something different from a white Christian narrative. We're rethinking the narrative, you say.
I think that's a really important aspect. I think early on, polygamy was somewhat of a, you know, for the white Christian, even though Mormons had this white Christian Protestant-type background, it really shifted that. And polygamy was kind of looked at as something that other races or other lands or was foreign. And we've always been open and free to all kinds of faiths as long as it was white Christian. And I think our country's evolving from that, and necessarily so. And I think the social narrative around polygamy and polygamous, what this ruling does is effectively change that. People can get up and give their stories, and it's all their opinion about what they think about polygamy. This is an evidence that was introduced in the court of law, and the court very emphatically said it wasn't just one issue. This was, you know, the right to privacy. This is the right of association, right of religious freedom. There's many aspects the court addressed here that said this is wrong. We've been wronged, and for the now the state has to either recognize and apologize and say, yeah, we were wrong. This is a bad law, or they got to continue to fight the silliness and continue on with it. And I think the long term impact is the social narrative does change.
Joe Darger, co-author along with his wives Alina, Vicky, and Valerie of the book Love Times 3, Our True Story of a Polygamous Marriage. He joined us by phone. Joe, thanks very much.
You bet. Thank you.
801-585-WEST, the number 2, join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jennifer, Joe Darger mentioned now the state has a decision to make. As he put it, do they accept it, or do they go on with the silliness, as he said? Do you have a sense of what the state... Is it too early to say what you think the state may do, how they may respond?
Well, I mean, in the past, they've always said that they would defend the bigamy law against any challenge. And I saw that over the weekend, Governor Herbert said he doesn't really appreciate when judges act, you know, through case law to basically change state law. So,
but you know, isn't that sort of a typical kind of Republican talking point, this resistance to being imposed upon a federal judge, leave it to the states?
Well, right. None of us like to be told what to do by anybody else in any aspect of our lives. But that is, yeah, I think that's the typical response. They're going to have to make a calculation about whether or not it makes sense to do that and what they stand to gain or lose. I mean, would it change the law? Would it change the reality on the ground of what happens every day? I don't know, because it's up to individual prosecutors and individual situations. So there are plenty of things in statute that have sort of gone by the wayside over time that have never been excised from, you know, the document or from the law. But they're just still on the books. So maybe that will be Utah's decision. I don't know. I guess it might depend in part on who is the next attorney general.
Yeah. That is a big question.
Yes.
Very much up in the air. 801-585-WEST is the number 2. Join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Marisa is with us in Draper, Utah. Marisa, welcome.
Thank you. I would like to see it become legalized only in the fact that people would come out, and then it would make it easier for those women that are being abused and children that are being abused be able to come out more and not be so afraid, because when they're in secret, it's a scarier situation to come out, because then they will put more problems on their other wives and other children that are not involved in that. And so I feel like it would be important to legalize it in the fact that they would feel more free out in society and be able to come out freer in society with the illegal issues that are happening as far as abuse in the families.
That's it's an important question. In fact, let me get another perspective on it. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Thanks very much for the call. Marion Munn is joining us now. She's an anti-polygamist activist, finishing her graduate degree at the University of Utah. In her thesis, she's looking at how the media talks about polygamy. We should also mention that she was formerly in a polygamist relationship. She has also worked with the group Holding Out Help, a nonprofit organization that helps people who are leaving polygamy. And she's joining us this morning. And Marion Munn, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. Should I just say I don't consider myself as an anti-polygamist activist? I would consider myself as a pro-human rights activist.
Are you against polygamy?
I am. I'm not against. I want to say up front that I have friends who are polygamists, and I'm not here to sort of demonize polygamists. I don't think they are all in the Warren Jeffs ilk. However, I don't really have any compunction with criticizing polygamy as an institution.
So, with that said, how are you reacting to Judge Wadup's decision, to his ruling?
Well, I think one of the merits is that it really has identified a problem in the law, which is selectively applying unlawful cohabitation just to polygamists. Mm. And I do see that as a problem. I think it highlights the fact that Utah needs to make some changes in its law to make some distinctions about, you know, who this should be applied to. To selectively apply it, I think, is an injustice. However, there are aspects of it that that I am not so comfortable with. The one is to sort of invoke, someone talked about, you know, the rights that come under the Constitution. And my feeling is that that's already been argued under, you know, Reynolds and, you know, the 1800s, that, yes, of course, the Constitution of the United States protects freedom of religious belief. However, it doesn't automatically protect religious practices, particularly if they are damaging to individuals or to society. So I would have a problem with it seeing being protected as some kind of religious right.
So do you think that that concern that you have for protecting vulnerable people, let's say children or women who might be in coercive relationships, that trumps the religious rights of others?
Yes, I do. You know, I mean, basically what you're saying, you know, with limitations is that, you know, you can't sacrifice a child to the volcano god simply because, you know, it's part of your religious worldview. So you know, I think it could open the door to a lot of problematic practices that we might not want to see in religion. And I do feel, and not just feel, you know, I've had some experience myself, and I will say I'm not one of those who had, you know, an atypical, you know, just a bad relationship. I don't think I had a bad relationship. I think my relationship was pretty typical of other women's around me. So there are several points, you know, Chief Justice Bowman, they spent months looking at testimony from polygamists here in Utah who are able to make their views heard, and also experts in the field like Joseph Henrich and others, and Marcy Hamilton, who were able to, you know, they were able to listen to both sides. And he still came out and said, you know, polygamy isn't inherently abusive. I'm not saying necessarily sexually abusive, but I do feel that at the very least it's emotionally abusive to women. There's religious abuse going on. You know, I think we're very seduced by this consenting adults argument, which I think has been rather cynically appropriated by pro-polygamists, considering, you know, most of the views towards, you know, homosexuality. So what I'm seeing really is that I don't see the same application. You know, women are making a choice, yes, to enter into polygamy. I mean, some are very much coerced, children. However, on the other hand, there is this religious compulsion, you know, women really truly believing that if they don't do it, God's going to destroy them. Mm. I think that really puts a different spin on what consenting adults means. You know, I also feel that, you know, the gay rights question, it's more akin to monogamy. You have two people who are committing to each other, who are able to form, you know, potentially a stable relationship with two people. Even if children are brought into that, there's still that kind of stability. Whereas what I saw and have experienced, I've seen lots of kids coming out of polygamy, you know, Lost Boys and over the FLDS. You know, what I was seeing there was that there wasn't that stability. Dad wasn't there, really. He couldn't be, however much he loved his children.
So what you're saying is, inherent in this religious practice is abuse.
That is what I'm saying. Yeah. It's, you know, yes, of course there are problems in monogamy, but they're not built in.
Right.
In the same way that they're built in to polygamy.
I wanted to have you respond to our caller Marisha's comment earlier. It's one you hear all the time, that decriminalizing now plural marriage or plural cohabitation is going to bring it out of the shadows. And if you decriminalize it, then you can fix some of the inherent issues from it. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't know that you can fix inherent issues because they're there. You know, they're just in it. However, you know, I think what Marissa says, I can totally understand why people are saying that. You know, that seems like a really logical way of looking at things. However, I'm not sure that that's going to happen because, for two reasons, really. People are saying that polygamists have separated themselves because they're afraid of being prosecuted. But, you know, if you're going to band together in a religious community, as, you know, the FLDS did in Texas, if anyone wants to prosecute, and no one has for many, many years, if you want to prosecute, then it's like putting a target on yourself saying, I am a polygamist, come and get me. So that didn't really offer them any protection, you know, against the law. The second thing is, in my experience, most polygamist groups who separate themselves do so not out of fear of prosecution, but of this religious belief that they're an elect and special people who need to keep themselves separate.
Yeah.
Separate from the evils of the world, you know, not to mingle with the world and to partake of the sins. And so I don't see, you know, I don't see anything changing. Really, nothing is changing. We've had de facto decriminalization in Utah for many, many years now. No one's being prosecuted. So in that sense, it doesn't change anything. But I think, you know, it might change people's perspective and it might make it easier to legalize it, which I would not like to see happen.
Let me ask you one final question.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you worry that if this issue is cast as a religious rights issue, those who critique it are going to be seen as religious bigots.
Well, precisely. And I think it takes away some of the strength of the law. Let me just give a, you know, hypothetical. In Utah right now, parents are able to give permission for their 15-year-olds to be married. And then the courts decide whether it's in the child's best interests. Now, hypothetically, you can take some polygamist who's got multiple women. You know, if you're in the FLDS, it'd be 30 or more. None of whom, you know, that he's not married to any of these women, but decides that he wants to not get in trouble with the law for statutory rape. So, you know, he wants a 15-year-old. So the obedient parents give permission. Now, if this is now taken to the state, what are they going to say? No, well, a polygamy is not a good environment for a 15-year-old. They can't say that anymore. So I see it. You know, I think we need to see polygamy not as about, you know, two or more adults in a bedroom. It's much bigger than that. We're talking about children. We're talking about family units. It affects upon children. I think we need to get away from this. I think a somewhat selfish view of, well, it's all about just, you know, adults just doing their own thing. It's a lot more than adults doing their own thing. And I think, you know, I'd hate to see the door open to more children being hurt under polygamy.
That's Marianne Munn. She's a human rights activist finishing her graduate degree at the University of Utah, thesis which looks at how the media talks about polygamy. Joined us today by phone. Thank you very much for joining us, Marianne Munn.
Thank you, Doug.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call from Don, who's in Ogden. Don, welcome.
Hi, welcome. Okay, well, the question is, if the church was practicing polygamy for about 20 years after the first official declaration, why couldn't they easily go back to polygamy?
Yeah, that is the – I think that's a question. Jennifer Dobner, I mean, you said who knows, right? I mean, what...
I can't really see that happening. That's way above my pay grade.
Of course. We should say there's been no reaction from the LDS Church officially, or has there?
I did see over the weekend that in a Peggy Fletcher Stack story in the Tribune, their reaction was, this doesn't change anything. We don't practice polygamy regardless of whatever is in the law. And And so I think that would probably be the most that we would hear from them on this issue. I mean, I think some would argue that this is Don's point is why couldn't they just practice it? Well, that's what Mormon fundamentalists have been doing. They've never stopped. Some segment of those people who cling to that early Mormon theology, the early Joseph Smith theology, haven't stopped practicing polygamy. And I presume that this will continue, but it won't be, I wouldn't think, officially sanctioned by the LDS Church. If that were going to change, it would have to be legal, you know, in the eyes of the law. And that's I don't see that happening. I don't see the day in soon when Joe Darger could have a legal, valid marriage license with each one of his three wives.
There's no clamoring among Orthodox LDS people to have
no, I don't think so. I don't think so, no.
We have with us Jennifer Dobner, Salt Lake City-based journalist, and we invite you to join the conversation. Thanks very much for your call, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the news, which came on Friday, late Friday. A federal judge had ruled key parts of Utah's polygamy law are unconstitutional. We're talking about what the ruling said and what it means. 801-585-WEST is our number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us now is William Duncan, the director of the Marriage Law Foundation. It's a Utah County nonprofit group that opposes same-sex marriage, and Mr. Duncan is joining us from his home in Lehi. William Duncan, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I wonder how you're reacting to this. As we've been talking about earlier, people are saying that the influence of gay marriage activists had a part to play in this ruling, yet there is the ruling did not suggest that legal marriage would be appropriate for polygamist people. So I'm wondering how you're sort of parsing what Judge Wadup said.
Parsing is really the right question. It's a complicated opinion. It's very, very long in the first instance, and then covers a number of different things, some of which seem like, you know, valid points, and others seem like more of a stretch. I think it is important that the judge stop short of saying that marriage has to be, as a matter of the Constitution, redefined to include multiple partners, and that I think is positive, but there's still sort of the troubling undercurrent of the judiciary deciding, you know, whether what the state laws related to marriage, you know, in Utah ought to be. So I think those are the kind of the tension that I see in the decision.
I wonder. Are you society? You've talked about having an interest in marriage as an institution that brings a mother and a father together for the benefit of children. You've talked about how procreation and the capacity to create a family is important. Well, here you've got people who can procreate. I wonder what this does to that part of your case.
Well, that's. That's what we've always made a distinction between, you know, group marriages or plural marriages or whatever the kind of thing is, and same-sex marriages. They are different in that sense, and have different impacts on the way society understands marriage. I think, and again, you know, the judge in this case hasn't said that, you know, our marriage laws, you know, we have to now give out licenses to, you know, three and four people. So I don't think that raises any of the kinds of concerns that, you know, that we would typically be worried about in a court decision involving marriage laws.
No, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have jumped in, but I guess if you think that you're safe in that part, what's the part that you don't like about the ruling?
Well, that's exactly the right question. So the part that we're concerned about is you know, if Utah has adopted a policy that's not wise or not smart about marriage, then you know, that's the kind of thing that the framers of our Constitution had delegated to the states and the people of the states to figure out. And when they when the judges take it upon themselves to say, well, actually, you know, you kind of blew it on that policy, and actually the policy should be this, without some very clear constitutional direction, that raises the concern that, you know, well, why not other areas of marriage? And we've seen that happen in this case. There was initially a decision about the sodomy case out of Texas, and that decision kind of had some general, vaguely worded direction, and the court said, okay, well, that means that the state can't prosecute people who are, in effect, living in polygamy. And, you know, so our concern, I think, is that it's not hard to imagine a court saying, well, gosh, if we can't ban polygamy as it's lived out socially, a person living with a lot of different women, it's not married to, pretending to be married, that kind of thing, why should the state be able to make a distinction between legal and illegal marriages? And the real basic concern has to do with the role of the court in terms of these important social policies.
It's interesting. Justice Antonin Scalia, he had a very strong dissent from that Lawrence case that Judge Wadups cited in his decision. And Justice Scalia believed that the ruling was going to really keep the government from using, I'm not sure if he put it this way, but morality in its legislation. And he said this. He said it was going to open the door to legalizing bigamy, same-sex marriage, adult incest, prostitution, adultery, fornication, bestiality, obscenity. He was pretty. I mean, I wonder if you if you think that he's right, that this has sort of opened the door now.
Sure. Well, there's a degree to which that's true. I mean, he wasn't. You know, sometimes people aren't careful with that dissent, and they suggest that he's endorsing that idea. That what he's saying is the reason the court was wrong to not ground its opinion in a more direct piece of the Constitution, instead just kind of leaving it at the discretion of judges to determine what laws are wise and what are not, is that it can very easily, the logic could lead to these other things. And Judge Wadup seems to have accepted that, not as a warning, but as a direction that that's true. Then if we're not going to prosecute one kind of sexual behavior, then we have to not criminalize other kinds. And I think that's really the risk that's raised by this process of the court saying, well, you know, we're just going to sort of act as a super legislature deciding if whether the laws of Utah are wise or not. And then once they do that, they set in motion a logic that you know will clearly be applied in other cases, whether or not that was their initial intention.
William Duncan, director of the Marriage Law Foundation, joined us from his home in Utah County. Mr. Duncan, thanks very much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer Doebner, so what now? I wonder, you know, when you sort of consider this question of whether there's some kind of precedent here that may apply, you have to wonder whether something like this would have any effect at all in other states. I mean, are polygamists elsewhere clamoring for the laws to change, or is this pretty much isolated to Utah and the Intermountain West?
Well, I think for the moment, it is only affects Utah. There are something like an estimated 50,000 non-denominational Christian polygamists across the country. Whether or not this sparks somebody else to file a lawsuit or to challenge their state bigamy laws, I don't know. As far as I know, Utah is the only state that has a statute that reads like this, that goes after cohabitation. And that's really what Wadups is talking about here. He's not talking about marriage laws. He's talking about cohabitation. So could it have an impact? Sure. But I think it'll take another lawsuit someplace else in the country.
To give more clarity,
yeah.
You know, I wanted to come back to this question that came up. Marisha mentioned it. It came up in the conversation with Marion Munn, the idea of whether or not when you decriminalize something, whether or not it gives an opportunity to sort of bring people out of the shadows. And so some of the abuse of women, abuse mm-hmm. of children. Mm-hmm. What do you know about that?
Well, I think there's some evidence here in Utah that when people feel safer and they feel like there's a cultural competency upon the agencies that they would seek help from, that they do. I mean, Utah established this thing called the Safety Net Committee a few years ago. It was run from the Attorney General's office through a social service agency here in Salt Lake City and a companion agency in southern Utah. That has been a resource for polygamists. There have been a lot of education. They've written a thing called the I won't think of the name of it, but they have a handbook that helps, you know, social workers and police officers understand the polygamist culture. I think what we've seen from that is when there's understanding on both sides and when people know, well, if I need a police officer, I can call one because I won't be prosecuted for my lifestyle. I'll be helped for whether it's abuse or whatever that's going on in the home. I think there's some evidence through the Safety Net Committee that some people will come forward. I mean, and I don't think that whether or not that happens in monogamous relationships. People don't speak up when they need help because they have all kinds of fears. But I think there is, yes, to my way of thinking, the potential to make people feel safer and get the help they need.
Let me ask you this finally. I wonder, the question is now, as we said, whether the state, whether the governor is going to want to challenge this appeal. Marianne Munn mentioned the fact that we're already sort of the de facto mm-hmm. decriminalization. Do you think the state could just say we're not going to really touch it because it's in effect what we're doing now?
She's absolutely right that it's sort of de facto decriminalization. The problem has always been for polygamists is that the minute you step out into the public eye and start talking about yourself, Tom Green, for example, you know, he went on the talk show circuit and then got himself in a lot of criminal trouble and went to prison for a number of years. Same thing with Cody and his family. They went on television and then that becomes a problem for the state of Utah in how it's perceived by everyone else. So, it'll be up to the governor and it'll be up to the AG what they want to do. They'll have to decide, you know, weigh the risks and, you know, the benefits for them of defending the law. But, I think if you're a polygamist in Sandy or Draper or Riverton or southern Utah, you could probably breathe a little easier today.
It's Jennifer Doebner. She is a Salt Lake City-based journalist, has covered Friday's ruling for Reuters. Joined us here in the studio. Jennifer, thanks.
Thank you.
We invite you to continue the conversation by going to our website. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.